going to open our committee on education, Senate Committee on Education today, the 14th of April. And we're going to go a little out of order because we have some special guests here today that would like to speak, and they have to get back to school. So that's an important thing. So I think it's, is it Mika? Mika, we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 957, and we're going to invite Mika up to come on up, and you can come on up too, Lori. And we'll give a short explanation of the bill. So that
is it preferred that I sit or stand? Sit. Okay.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 957 prohibits the State Board of Education from establishing certain standards for instructional time unless money is available for the state system of kindergarten through grade 12 public education meet specified percentages of money to be determined to be sufficient by the Quality Education Commission.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Mika Annis. I am a junior at Glencoe High School in Hillsborough, which is in Washington County. And first off, I would like to state that I, my friends and I all noticed a lack of public access. We weren't able to even know that this law that mandated for us to be in school for 990 hours was being passed until after it was passed. Luckily, I've had the opportunity to come here and testify about SB 957 so that I can be part of the decision that is directly affecting me and my peers, which I think is incredibly important. So as I mentioned before, I attend Glencoe High School. At Glencoe High School, the requirement to graduate is 24 credits. In order to get the honors diploma, which is the highest designation that we have, you have to receive 26 credits. Right now, as a junior who just finished first semester of my junior year, I have 19.5 credits with some early releases and free periods mixed in. By the end of my senior year in 2016, I will have 30.5 credits, and that is with one early release every semester of my senior year. So I will be spending time next year, if this law is in place, in classes that I don't need to graduate and classes that I don't really want to be in the first place. Instead of spending time in classes that are unnecessary for graduation and even my own education, I could be spending my time doing things that actually matter, such as working, interning, practicing sports or activities, or even working on homework, scholarship, and other schoolwork. My friends could be doing the same, and it's really important that we have this opportunity to do those kinds of things. Right now, as I had a free period last semester, I used a lot of that time to do things that were immensely valuable for me and my school, actually. I did things such as work on the Dornbecker's Kids Making Miracle Council, which helped fundraise money for Dornbecker's Children's Hospital. I used this as an opportunity to advocate for equity at the Hillsborough School District office. I also used this time to work on community service through my student government and through Key Club at my school. Looking at the future and looking at what effects this bill would have, it's going to take away a lot of opportunities for students. A lot of people I know use this time to work, use this time to intern. So for working, a lot of kids need to work in order to support their families or help pay for things like graduation or college fees. Not having that opportunity will hurt students and their families economically. It could also hurt students' futures, such as not having the opportunity to intern. I know students who intern for everything from the Chamber of Commerce to Hillsborough to even things such as governors and congresspeople's offices. So people in this very room are probably affected by having students not in their fourth periods and interning in their offices instead. It has also allowed students to do things such as practice sports and activities. I have friends who are competitive dancers and are looking at going to college for dance. They have to arrive at their dance studios usually by 1 or 2 p.m. every single day in order to be at the level they need to be competitive dancers. Without this opportunity, they would be set back from the rest of the people they are competing against. Additionally, students need free time. High school is a lot of work, and high school, we already have 6 to 7 classes. We cannot afford to have more classes and not have that time to work on things such as schoolwork, college apps, and scholarships. Additionally, I need that time and my friends need this time to do things such as get help in subjects, work with tutors, or even work as study groups. Having this time is important, and having this time gives us more opportunities to succeed. Although this does not work for everyone, it will benefit a lot of students. Having the ability to have a fourth period off or a late start will help a lot of students. And for a lot of students, it will give them the time they need in order to be successful. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Oh, yeah. We'll go ahead, Laura.
Thank you, Chair Roblin and committee members. For your record, Lori Wimmer representing the Oregon Education Association. It's 42,000 members here in support of a bill that we requested, actually, Senate Bill 957. And thank you, committee members, for agreeing to sponsor the bill. On January 22, 2015, to give you a little context to the comments that were just made, the State Board of Education adopted a new set of school year requirements for Oregon school children in terms of instructional hours. These new expectations, while based on a shared value for maximizing educational time for students, did not come with the resources to pay for them. And for lengthening the school day or restrictions on what could count, they also changed definitions on what could count toward those hours as required minimum hours. And for that reason, the education community opposed the adoption of those rules to no avail. And you'll have, in the OLA system, you have my written testimony, which shares with you some of the various unintended consequences that we felt unfunded mandate would have on a lot of school districts who are already at the minimum hours that they could have for a full school year for elementary, middle, and high. And some of the things that we thought were most particularly true is here we are the third highest class sizes in the nation. We knew that that problem would be exacerbated if it was required for schools to offer more hours than they had to before as a minimum if they were struggling financially and there was no money that came with this administrative rule. We warned that that would happen, and we know that that will happen. So we spoke with legislators who also shared our concerns, several of whom weighed in at the rulemaking process, and they agreed to promote a solution that would put a little pause on the implementation of these new, more rigorous instructional time hours until and unless the legislature is able to fund to a level that the districts can afford to offer them. It's a simple thing, pay for what you wish for. And so that's what this bill does, in effect. It restores the hours that were in effect prior to the adoption of the rules that were passed on January 22nd until the funding level is 83% of the quality education model. For this biennium, that 83% would put us at about the $7.6 billion level for implementation of the new, more rigorous instructional hours requirement. And as you have heard, some of the other impacts are that there are students in poverty who have to work in order to put food on their table, and those students would be impacted. There are students who've already satisfied their 24-hour requirements before they've gotten to their senior year or even their junior year in some cases. There are students who have all kinds of extracurriculars that make a well-rounded education system, education for a student. And for all of those reasons, one-size-fits-all rules do not necessarily mean better instruction. We do have one of the shortest school years in the nation. It's something I think we all want to work together to ameliorate, because the more time that you can have on instruction, particularly if you're a struggling learner and need more time on tasks, the better. But it needs to be done in the right way and not in an arbitrary one-size-fits-all kind of way. And so we're asking for your help to make sure that we take this pause until we have the resources to pay for what we wish for. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Any questions for these two? Thank you. Now you can get back to school on time, I hope.
Mm-hmm. You're great.
It was great to have you here.
Thank you. It
is impressive that high school people are willing to come to the legislature and testify. I appreciate that, so thank you.
Mr. Chair, and I think I'd like to underscore the point she made at the beginning of her testimony before some of your members were here, and that is that she knew about this process, and that's how come she could be here to testify today. She didn't know about the rulemaking process, and so that input that she offered you was not available to the State Board of Education. Thank you.
Thank you. So we're going to leave this open, but we're going to take a pause and go back to our work sessions, because we have members that are going to have to come and go for different reasons, and we're almost all here right now, so we can move forward. And we'll be with you shortly. Okay. So with that, let's open a work session on Senate Bill 536. And this bill directs, I'll let you do that.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 536 directs the Department of Education to assist public educational entities with developing regional service delivery systems for the purpose of providing efficient and effective services for public educational entities. This bill has no prior subsequent referral and no amendments. A fiscal impact has been issued. It does have a $300,000 fiscal, and the bill has no revenue impact.
And we are moving it, though, right? So, I'm going to wait 1 second about this one. Is Ozzy here? Is this the bill, Ozzy? Could you want to come up to the table? I only need to ask a question. I think we had a similar bill in the House. Or it wasn't this one. What was
no,
the number?
That was 930.
930. Okay. We don't need you. Thank you. I appreciate that. We have a bill that the House and us have very similar bills, and we would like them to get to similar places so they can actually have the conversation about it. So I wanted to make sure it was not the wrong bill. So, Senator Knopf.
Chair Roblin, I move Senate Bill 536 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Knopf moves Senate Bill 536 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any opposition to having this go to Ways and Means? No. Then it is passed. And now we're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 536. We're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 730. And we'll have a short explanation.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 730 establishes the Biomass Heat for Rural Schools Fund. This bill does have a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. There are no amendments at this time. A fiscal impact has been issued. Further analysis is required, and the bill has no revenue impact.
So with that.
Chair Roblin, I move Senate Bill 730 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Knopf moves Senate Bill 730 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? Seeing none. So moved. And we'll close our work session on Senate Bill 730. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 898.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 898 directs the Department of Education to award grants to school districts for support service programs, education innovation programs, and education intervention programs. This bill had an initial subsequent referral to the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue. We are considering the -1 amendments at this time. A fiscal impact statement has been issued. Further analysis is required, and a revenue impact statement has been issued. Further analysis is also required. Do you like me to describe the -1s?
Sure.
The -1 amendments just fix a small drafting error. We were missing 3 zeros, so it said 150,000 instead of 150 million.
Yeah, just a small rounding error, right? Okay.
So in talking with some people in Ways and Means, that this is a bill that could have a possibility of being used to distribution through the formula of extra monies for special projects like early reading and other kinds of things. It may or may not be used, but it's similar to what we used to have, the innovation fund that was available before, and it could be used in a similar way. So I've had conversations. They would like it there, so that's what we're doing. Is there Senator Knopf?
Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the -1 amendment as presented.
Senator Knopf moves the -1 amendments. Is there any discussion? Ways and Means will do what they want with it anyway, but as we all know, is there any discussion? Is there any opposition to the amendments? Seeing none, it passes. Senator Knopf.
Thank you, Chair Roblin. I move Senate Bill 898 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the prior subsequent referral to the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue be rescinded and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay. So Senator Knopf moves Senate Bill 898 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the prior subsequent referral to the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue be rescinded and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee of Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? Seeing none, so moved. And we'll close our work session on Senate Bill 898. open a work session on Senate Bill 930.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 930 modifies the method by which minimum amounts are distributed for education service districts. This bill has a subsequent referral to the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue. The bill has no amendments at this time. A fiscal impact and revenue impact have been issued.
So, Senator Knope.
Chair Roblin, I move Senate Bill 930 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue by prior reference.
So I just want to make a statement. There was a similar bill on the House side, different numbers, different explanations. I hope that our wonderful revenue person and the revenue person on the other side can have conversations about that.
I think they've met, so they probably can.
So with that, is there any opposition to the motion? Is there any further discussion? I should have asked that first, and then no other discussion. With that, the bill passes, and we send it off to... So we'll close our work session on Senate Bill 930. We will start our public hearing. So we finish the other one first. Well, we've got Senator here, so why don't we
get a couple?
Yeah, we have a couple. Oh, okay. We'll take them in order. Let's see, 955. Senate Bill 955. We're going to open a public hearing. And come on up, and you can give a brief explanation.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 955 provides that a student whose legal residency is not in the school district is considered a resident of the school district if the student attended a public charter school located in that district for at least 4 years and completed the highest grade offered by the public charter school located in the district.
Senator.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee, and thank you for giving me an opportunity to speak a little bit on behalf of Senate Bill 955. Liz Voland approached me. She's in the back of the room right now with her son. She approached me about crafting a bill to address a situation affecting her son. In summary, I think the legislature intended to allow charter school students within a sponsoring district to be given a preference to continue their education within that district. But there's also a statute that says that there must be a lottery. And so there's this situation where the student has completed the highest level of the charter school within the Sherwood School District, still has more years to go in high school, would like to attend the Sherwood High School, has not met the lottery, lives right on the border, I believe, at least one of the students affected, and really wants to go to Sherwood School District, and it's important. It allows student continuity in education. The students have friends and connections, and they've their routines and time in school and all the networking that they have done within the school community will help them with their educational success. And I've tried to make this a narrowly tailored bill, and I realize that there might be issues with some on the House side. And if anybody has any ideas to address that, to make it narrowly tailored, I would appreciate a suggestion, because I think it's really important, at least to the two students who are sitting in the back, and perhaps to a few more students around the state. Thank you.
Yes, question.
Thank you. A couple questions.
Yes.
Okay.
Senator Gosser.
So what if, and in Sherwood, I know there's just one high school, so this isn't an issue, but if you look in another part of the state where there might be two or three high schools in a district, and you have students that live within that school district that want to attend those high schools, but there isn't enough room for them to move, do you think it would be appropriate for a student that didn't live in the district to have first crack at a high school in a district that somebody lived inside, or would you be open to crafting something that gave them priority after all of the students that live in the district are accommodated? Again, it wouldn't impact Sherwood because there's only one high school, but.
Like I said, I'm open to any suggestions that might help accommodate this situation and help it pass on the other side. So I
have one more question.
Oh, yes, please.
So we have another bill, which is, I think it's Senate Bill 709, that's looking at kind of interdistrict transfer and cleaning up some of the lottery cleanup piece. Would you be open to folding this into that, if we're able to narrowly tailor that, make sure these kids are taken care of, and move it forward in that way?
You know, Senator Gelser, I'm not familiar enough with the details of Senate Bill 709 to give you an affirmative one way or you know, an answer one way or another on that, but I certainly am open to discussing that. So.
Thanks. And just to follow up, it's the content is somewhat similar. It's looking at if a student is attending a school and they move during the school year or the summer, that we make sure that they're able to stay in the school that they started. It's the bill is really a lot about permanency and making sure that kids are able to stay in places where they've established their.
Senator Gelser, I appreciate an opportunity to help accommodate students and help them stay within the school community that they have become accustomed to. So any direction that we can go that way, I'm open to. Thank you.
So, you know, we have open enrollment procedures.
Yes.
Some schools abide by some choose to do it, some choose not to.
Yes.
We also have a number of different ways to do transfers. And different school districts use different ones. And what Senator Gelser has been trying to do is narrow those so that everybody looks at one pathway, in particular a transfer kind of thing. You'd also have the other one on top with people still choosing in and out so until we figure out what we're going to do. But it is an attempt to help school districts and people understand what the pathway is. So.
And Mr. Chair, if I could just add on, the reason I asked if you would be open to moving into the other has a bigger relating clause to accommodate all of those. We've been working on transfers and student movement for several years, and I'm really interested in students being able to move to where they want to go. But in that process, I've found that every time we have a bill about students moving, everybody gets really, really confused. And having multiple ones of them, kind of multiple bills talking about the multiple processes,
right,
could add to the confusion. So if we could find a way to consolidate moving over to the House, we might both find more success and kids
absolutely
could do
better. Absolutely. Definitely open to that. Thank you. Thank you.
I know
Thank
Senator Haas likes talking about transfers. He loves it when I come in to talk about transfers.
So, Dr. Samuel Henry and Emily Nazaro. I got that wrong, but that's okay. Come on up. Oh, sorry. I'm with 955, wrong group. I'll be back in a second. Put this one right down where I was. So we had them both open. 955. That would be Olivia Wingert, Clayton Wingert, and I think we'll wait for the other two so we have common groups together.
Chair Roblin and the rest of the committee, thank you so much for having us today. My name is Olivia Wingert, and I'm here to talk about why I support Senate Bill 955. I'm a mom of an eighth grader who is currently in a very stressful situation regarding his education. He's been attending the Sherwood School District charter school for the last 8 years. He's been there since the first grade. We live in rural Sherwood, and our address and phone number are both Sherwood, but technically we're in the Newburgh School District. The Sherwood school bus even drives right by our door every school day. Everything we do is in Sherwood. We work, play sports, go to church, own a family business. Clayton loves his community and his school and his friends. He's been losing sleep at night due to the anxiety caused by not knowing his education future and what will happen to him. We would like the opportunity for Clayton to continue in his education with his current classmates and playing sports and with the same teammates and coaches that he's known his whole life. We support Senate Bill 955 because we believe it will provide fairness and consistency to the currently confusing House Bill 2747, which changed the law in 2013 and does not allow the districts to give priority to students already attending the district school if they don't live within the district. This law change was made after we had invested 6 years into the Sherwood School District, and 20% of the money the state gives the charter school has gone to the district. We have been seeking a solution to this problem by having conversations with the Sherwood School Board, but their hands are tied because of the House Bill 2747. So we're hoping that the Senate Bill 955 will help to clear this up. We're hoping that it will be a permanent solution to allow kids that have been attending school in the district to stay, if they've been attending for 4 years, to be able to stay in that district. And if they graduate from the highest level, even if they live out of the district. I ask that you please help us and support the Senate Bill 955 so that other students in Clayton's same predicament will not have to go through the stress and anxiety that he and the rest of our family have had to endure. Supporting the Senate Bill 955 will allow the district to give these students the opportunity to stay with their current teachers, friends, coaches, and community. Supporting this bill is the right thing to do and in the best interest of the students. Thank you so much for scheduling a hearing and giving us an opportunity to tell you why this bill is so important to us.
Chair Roblin and the rest of the committee, I'm Clayton Wingert, and I'm an eighth grader in Sherwood Charter School. I've been going to charter school for my whole life. Even though we have a Sherwood address and phone number, we live in the Newburg district, right on the line. I'm asking you to please support support SB 955. Due to the rule change 2 years ago, I might not be able to get to go to Sherwood High School. It's very stressful to know that I might not be able to continue my education in the district I've known, love, and went to my whole life. I believe that it is in my best interest to continue to go to school in my community. Everything I do is in Sherwood, including work, eat, go to friends' houses, play sports, and volunteer. The only time I've went to Newburg, which is what I would go to if this bill does not pass, is for a wrestling tournament. Anyway, I'm asking you to please help pass the bill so myself and others will get to stay in the community we've always been in. We've asked the Sherwood School Board to help us with this dilemma, but we need you to pass this bill so they can help me. I believe that SB 955 brings focus and consistency to the current confusing law. Passing this bill would be very helpful, and I believe it is the right thing to do. Thank you for taking the time to listen and help me out.
Thank you for being here. Question, Senator Fire.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. So you live in the Newburg School District and want to go into the Sherwood District. Is that correct?
We've currently been attending. The Sherwood Charter School is in the Sherwood School District, so we've been there for.
Is the Sherwood School District not allow open enrollment?
Not this year.
Are they crowded?
Yes.
So that's why, okay.
If I may, there is a total of 4 students who are affected in this, and Sherwood is a very large district, so it's a very small amount that is affected.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chair, I think I just wanted to point out that issue of that broadness to districts that are different than Sherwood or where the population might be bigger. So take SIO, for instance, which has, you know, a couple thousand kids that are part of the Oregon Connections Academy. If we said that all of them got to go to SIO High School, SIO High School would be absolutely
large,
inundated. And to be fair, that's not going to happen. They're virtual schools, but there are other districts where there's charters. If you look at Portland Public Schools, where there's multiple charters, that could really increase the student population and in a way that might not be sustainable within the district. So I think there need to be tweaks that meet the needs of kids and make it clear what risks people are taking when they enroll outside the district in which they live.
We did get a letter from Sherwood. It's in our announcements that says that they, this is the problem, but they would welcome the kids, except that they have these restrictions. So.
Yeah.
Thank you, and thanks for being brave enough to come up and talk to a committee. It's not always easy to do. You did a very good job.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we'll have Ty Voland and Liz Voland.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, my name is Ty Voland. I'm an eighth grader attending Sherwood Charter School in the Sherwood School District. I've been part of the Sherwood School District and the Sherwood community for 9 years now, and I'm having to face a speed bump in the process of entering high school. Ever since kindergarten, my life has been solely based around Sherwood. I play sports, participate in extracurricular activities, and have made many friends. Along with sports being in Sherwood, my educational career has only been in Sherwood. For the past 9 years, the majority of my waking time has been spent in Sherwood, whether it be hanging out with friends, playing sports, participating in community events, or being at school. It has all been in Sherwood. For me to have to go to a completely different school district and not know anyone would be a devastating experience. Over the past couple of months, I've learned that I may not be able to continue my education with my peers. This has put a lot of stress on me, the other kids who are faced with the same problem, and all of our friends. My friend Clayton has been and I have been writing letters, meeting with our representatives, and talking to the Sherwood School Board. We've been extremely dedicated and focused on this bill, and for it to not pass would be heartbreaking. I truly do hope that all of you understand our situation and are willing to help us through this process. It seems unfair that the Sherwood School District has no option to decide whether to give priority to us if they open spots. We just want the opportunity to finish our education with the people and the community where we have spent all of our time. Thank you for taking the time to schedule this bill for a hearing.
Thank you. You don't have to be too close. You're good.
Chair Roland, members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here today. I think the last three folks who spoke, I'll try not to be redundant. Obviously, it's an emotional issue for the boys. I'd like to just talk to you a little bit about how we got here, and that is the situation became apparent last spring when we had our first group of eighth grade students from the school who had an issue with being able to matriculate to the high school, which had not been a problem to that point. And so as we heard them discoursing and we realized we were going to be in the same situation, we went back and looked at the minutes and tried to figure out, you know, what was going on and was there something solution-oriented we could do to try to be proactive coming into this year. And in the minutes, the members of the Sherwood School Board had indicated that they felt this was a legislative issue and that they weren't going to be able to do something absent a legislative fix. So then the process of trying to get educated on, as Senator Gelser has alluded to, the very complicated different processes that a district might have for students to be able to move into school. And while I've become educated, I am certainly no expert on it. It seemed like there's two tracks, and the one track with open enrollment allowed for priority for charter school students. It gave the, you know, it gave that the district that option, whereas the traditional inter-district transfer process for some reason did not. And so we asked for Senator, it was recommended that we go to the representatives from the district where the charter school is located and see if we could craft a solution. And Senator Thatcher was kind enough to offer to try to draft something very narrowly to address this so it didn't cause unintended consequences. I would say that to address Senator Gelser, your statement earlier, I'm not sure the vehicle is necessarily as important as the solution. And so I am hearing what you're saying about other things that might come up, and we'd certainly be open to brainstorming and addressing to make sure that whatever comes out of committee is something that would be palatable and provides a solution not only for us, but it is a win-win for everybody who's involved. We're just looking for some fairness and consistency in the legislation. You know, I don't know that it's a charter school issue so much as it is a school district issue. The school district is saying, if we choose this path, our hands are tied. If we choose this path, they're not. And so we would like some parity in the statutes. And so that's kind of why we're here today. We've tried to make it as narrow as it was suggested by legislative counsel, I assume, and still open to additional changes to that. Obviously, he's been in school there since kindergarten. We're heavily invested, and then if I assume many of you are, excuse me, are parents, the logistics become an entirely different thing when you have, I still have two children that will be in the charter school, and I would have to be taking him to events in a different city and trying to get them to their events with, you know, within the district. And certainly we didn't anticipate this because going in this, you know, we've invested all this time, this was not an issue. It was just everybody was, you know, we had this assumption people were just naturally going on to the high school. There wasn't an issue until last spring. So at this point in the game, we're very heavily invested in the community where we go to school. And two, he could walk to the edge of our neighborhood and catch a bus to Sherwood. You know, I don't know that somebody would necessarily choose to be driving a ton to schools that are far outside of their area if they didn't have, you know, if they didn't have to. So we're just trying to address this in a way that's fair to the district and fair to the students, and we very much appreciate the opportunity to be before you today and have this conversation.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who wanted to speak to Senate Bill 955? Because I have no one else. We're going to close our public hearing on 955. And we will open, you've been here waiting the most patiently, so we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 953. Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Senator Doug Whitsett, representing District 28, Klamath, Crook, most of Lake, Deschutes, and Jackson counties. The Klamath County School District encompasses all of the Klamath County except for the Klamath City School District. Bly is a little town located about 55 miles down Highway 140 from Klamath Falls and about 45 miles from Lakeview. It was originally a Weyerhaeuser mill town. Unfortunately, the mill closed about 40 years ago. So you've got, I'm sure, little burgs like that in your district. The problem we're trying to solve is the property for the Bly School Gymnasium was donated to the Klamath County School District at some time prior to 1920 with the right of reversion to the donor when and if the property was ever no longer in use to the school district. And I'm sure there's properties like that all over the state of Oregon. The use of the property was abandoned more than a decade past, probably 30 years ago. The only school that's left open in that area is the Gearhart School, which is a grade 1-6. In the private sector, the right of reversion expires after a certain number of years. In the public sector, it does not. And so it requires that if the state government or any local government entity wants to sell the property with a right of reversion, they have to get everybody to sign off on it. This is the very extended family scattered over two or three continents now. And so all of the extended family cannot be contacted to sign off on the right of reversion on this ownership. This bill was carefully crafted by the attorneys at Legislative Council, Jim Erlings, the attorney for the Klamath County School District, and the local title company that's involved in the transaction to allow the sale of this property with a clear title and no other property. And that's why the wording is so precise in the bill. It simply excises the Bly School property from the current statute that prevents the sale without reversion. I have talked personally with a couple of the family members and have communication with others that pretty well have convinced me that the family doesn't want the property. The property, they consider it a liability to them. The property is a liability to the school district. Somebody else can use the property to put it to benefit. And so that's what we're trying to do with this bill. It's just one small piece of property in a semi-abandoned logging town.
Any questions? Senator, what's it? And I know this dual district has tried to get a hold of people, and then they finally realized that there was no way to get these that are all over the world.
Yeah,
the
according to the superintendent, Thede, the school district, it's been going on for some time trying to contact all the people, and it just hasn't been possible.
Yeah. Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is about the narrowest drafted bill I think I've ever seen.
I agree. And
I don't think it applies to anybody but that instance. Is that your...
Well, the original... Chair Roblin, Senator Beyer, the original concept that they brought would have allowed the right of reversion in any school district anywhere in Oregon. And we decided not to go there.
And that's one of the reasons. Pretty narrow.
One of the reasons why this bill was so late in getting here is we had to narrow it down. In order for me to sponsor it, it had to be one property, and this is what it is.
And then it subsequently retires that part of the statute at a time certain in the future.
Yes.
Which I thought was really narrow.
Very narrow.
You have more than that.
Any other questions for the senator? Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
There was no one else who had signed up to testify on this bill, so we will close that public hearing on Senate Bill 953. And we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 493. Senator Bates, you want to come up while we have a short explanation of our bill?
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 493 removes the ability of the governor to disband a university governing board or force a university to take other action if the university fails to comply with conditions established when the State Board of Higher Education endorsed the board.
Thank you, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. I'll speak to the bill just really quickly and may generate a few questions. Hopefully it won't. You may remember that last session we started setting up regional boards and independent boards for the big three universities in our state. SOU, Southern Oregon University, was one of the regional boards involved in that. We set up our own board, which has not actually officially taken place till July 1st, but they've already been meeting and setting up the provisional rules. There has been a sea change at Southern Oregon because of this and because we have a new president. We are the only campus in Oregon that has seen its undergraduate enrollment actually increase. We're expected to have a 2% loss. We have a 1.5% increase, and that continues to go up. A great deal of that is as a result of this new board. The board is made up of civic leaders and business leaders throughout Southern Oregon. That may not seem like a lot to people sitting in the Willamette Valley, but it's very important in Southern Oregon, where local involvement in institutions like this is extremely important. There was a comment made when we first set this up by a member of OUS that this was like giving the keys to teenagers as far as driving a car was concerned. One of those teenagers is now our board director. He is Bill Thorndike. He runs a large metal fabrication company. He serves on multiple boards across the United States, and including a little board called the Federal Reserve Board. Let me repeat that, the Federal Reserve Board. This is the kind of people we have on our board now, and they're changing the culture of the university. I'll give you an example of kind of things that are changing. We're doing retrenching and putting ourselves clearly back in the black. One of the programs we have there and have had for many years is a computer science program, which many of us thought was, to say the least, ineffective. It taught students to set up websites, which you can actually do in high school for the most part. We wanted people to learn how to code at the university, and we were blocked from doing that. We ultimately got that changed, and the first time now we'll be sending people out with a computer science program that they actually know how to write code, which is how you really make make yourself into a situation where you're really into IT, not just doing websites. And that's just one example of what's going on. We fulfilled all the requirements that the bill asks us to do and have done that already. We want to be in a situation where we have a board that stays very engaged in the university. And it's hard to get really good people of the Bill Thorndike type to stay engaged if they know that any time the governor can pull the rug out from under you. All we're asking is that we be in the same status as the other boards. We report to the HEC just like everybody else does. We'll be responsible for not only the finances, but the governance of the college. What's different about this board, I would point out to you also, that in regionals where you have small populations of students, 3,000, 4,000, the board is not just something that meets every 3 months and becomes boosters. These boards are intimately involved in running the university and making sure that it's effective and doing what it's supposed to do. In Southern Oregon, up to 2 or 3 years ago, you could have put a moat around Southern Oregon University and put barbed wire up and said, we are an island onto ourselves. We're not going to be involved with Grants Pass, Medford, Klamath Falls, or any other area, and don't tell us what to do. Though those have been taken down. We have programs reaching out to community colleges across the state, but particularly in our own area. Students are being recruited, and they're coming on campus and doing well. All we ask is that we be treated the same as other boards and trustees from other universities. That's what this bill does. It simply removes the governor's ability to end the board with no other remedy available. We want the board to be, as the other boards are, independent, self-sustaining, and deeply involved in the governance and movement of Southern Oregon forward.
Thank you. Any questions?
Yes.
Senator Hatt.
Thank you, Dr. Burns. I've been really impressed and surprised, frankly, about what's been going on in Southern Oregon from where they were a couple of years ago, as you noted, with very competent people on the board and trying to turn it around. So I'm curious why you think this governor, any governor, would pull the rug out into this circumstance.
If you live outside the Willamette Valley, you might not ask that question, okay? And I say that because, as an example, OUS, when it was the people who were actually were the trustees for our university, we asked them, when's the last time you were at Southern? And most of them said they'd never been there. And then a couple of them I asked, which comes first when you travel from Portland to Medford, Roseburg or Medford? They had to stop and think about it, and two of them got it wrong. There's a disconnect between rural Oregon and what happens in the Willamette Valley. And as much as our present governor and I are very close friends, and she is meeting with me on this on Thursday, my expectation is we won't always have a Kate Brown for governor. It's not going to happen. We need some independence and ability to function on a regional basis, responsibly, and move our universities forward. And so it's not that I distrust Governor Brown. She's a great person and personal friend. But I don't know who our next governor can be, and we need more autonomy in rural areas so that we can run our institutions there in a way that works for our communities.
Yep.
All right, let me, not to grill you here. What if you were governor and you had a board that wasn't turning it around but hit the rocks, there was malfeasance, and it was a problem? Wouldn't you, Governor Bates, want to step in and behalf of the citizens of Oregon and do the right thing?
Well, Senator, Chair Roland and Senator Hass, I really don't want to talk. I know where you graduated from, U of O. I really don't want to talk about U of O and the problems it's going to have soon. So, no, seriously, any of the boards can have that problem. You don't have to be a small or a large university. We've seen large universities have some serious problems. And you know what I'm talking about, and they've been very recent, with presidents have to be removed and other issues. So just having a certain set of boards under the thumb of the governor doesn't make something better or worse. I don't think that's necessary. The real way we deal with these things, and we've had to do it with an agency recently that I'm very involved with, and we had an agency board that was not functioning properly, and we went to the governor and basically had them fired and brought a new board in. And it was confirmed by the Senate. I think that's the way you do these things. The board's not functioning. There is a process for taking care of that, and it runs through the president of the governor's office and the Senate. So I think you can still do that, but it makes it more difficult. And there's a little process called Ways and Means. While we're not funding higher ed as much as we should, we are still a significant part of their funding. They don't want to lose that funding. And so from that point of view, I think we have lots of checks and balances on universities. But I think they should be the same for all, big and small.
Any other questions, Senator? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And I would like to point out one last thing, that the Southern Oregon University football team won its national championship this year. Not saying, just that we just won it.
Okay. And next we'll have Steve Vincent and Jay Kenton.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Steve Vincent. I work for Avista Utilities. I'm also a member of the SOU Board of Trustees. If you don't know who Avista is, we're a 126-year-old electric and gas utility serving the Pacific Northwest. In Oregon, we serve Southern Oregon and Eastern Oregon What's unique is we're actually the only private sector partner that covers Eastern or Oregon Tech and Southern outside of the national banks and maybe Walmart and McDonald's. And so I often get an opportunity to advocate on behalf of all three institutions. I'm here to testify in support of Senator Bates' bill, mainly because of the autonomy and what he spoke to. You know, what's interesting is I look across our three states and our service territories as a utility, well over 100 years, even 100 plus in Southern Oregon. Well, one thing that's remained consistent, regardless of changes in economies, I think of the silver mines in Idaho are gone, the aluminum plants in parts of our service territory are gone, even the timber sector has suffered. There have been a lot of recessions and ups and downs. One thing that's been consistent in that time are the higher ed institutions. They've been there, they've been a major part of our economy in each of these corners of our service territories and have produced the graduates that have transformed the economies. And some of those economies still need some help, but it's been impressive to see. I guess, you know, my concern as a board member, while we have met and exceeded those conditions, it's a certain type of threat that hangs over us. There's a certain amount of uncertainty around that. And I think that with the removal of, you know, sort of that threat of being dissolved, will help us continue to excel. And frankly, I don't think we'd be in this situation had we had a local governing board. The amount of hours and time that each of us are putting into this and the personal responsibility, it's going to be our pictures on the front page of the paper in Southern Oregon if this thing fails, and it will be, you know, a personal disgrace to each of us if this fails, versus, you know, a board that didn't have as much time to focus on that institution. And so I can tell you that everybody really has stepped up their game on the board, and we have an incredible amount of oversight that's now being placed on the institution that didn't exist before. I guess the last thing I'll say is that the evaluation of our success hasn't seemed very objective. Senator Bates made the reference to giving the keys to a teenager. A lot of us are still smarting from the insult. And as board members, we will often refer to that comment that was made. And I was thinking about whether or not to even bring it up or share it with you. But, you know, I actually think it was a good thing that that was said, because now we're the underdogs, right? And now we're all resolved to prove everyone wrong who thinks that we don't have it in us or that somehow we don't have the critical thinking skills, because I have two teenagers and don't really care to be compared to them a whole lot on how they make their decision making. So I would urge your support and passage of the bill, and thank you for your time. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Senator Rublin, members of the subcommittee, for the record, my name is Jay Kenton, and I'm the interim president of Eastern Oregon University. I am here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 493, which would effectively remove the conditions on governing boards of EOU and SOU. I want you to know that I was in the Valley on other business, thus I did not come here today only for this testimony. I am not here because I think EOU will have any troubles complying with these board conditions, but rather to ensure that the EOU Board of Trustees, comprised of well-intentioned individuals, has the full opportunity to work to guide the institution, not unlike that present at the other five institutions that formerly comprised the Oregon University System, as well as the 17 community colleges and OHSU. I firmly believe that a local board would not allow its institution to falter in the same way that a statewide board could. The fiduciary role of this board, coupled with familiarity with the institution and its leadership team, will simply not allow the situation to recur and thereby make these conditions unnecessary. I am also not here to say I distrust either the governor or the HEC. The governor is a person who I've known and found to be extraordinarily fair in her dealings, And the HEC is comprised of many individuals who also would not act in an arbitrary or capricious manner. Thus, I want these entities to know that I mean no disrespect by supporting this bill. EOU's conditions revolve around three things. Its enrollment, while it declined the last 2 years, applications are currently up in excess of 20% for next year. Its finances, we cut $4 million of recurring expenses in 2014-15, and are closely managing our revenues and expenses to rebuild our liquidity and our institutional reserves, diversify our revenues, and limit our long-term debt. And three, we have also restructured our faculty and staff workloads and are in the process of realigning our curricula with the needs of the region and state. In summary, we are improving on all the metrics specified in the board conditions and will continue to do so whether this bill is passed or not. We are also in the final phase of recruiting a new president for the institution. In fact, interviews are happening in an airport in a distant city. Removing these conditions now will ensure that we get the best leader for the institution. Eastern Oregon has yet to recover from the recession and desperately needs a vital and vibrant EOU. One way to ensure this is to recruit a high-quality leader who, working with the EOU Board of Trustees, will be unrestrained in positioning the institution for success and rebuilding the vitality of Eastern Oregon. It is a new day in Oregon higher education. We have embarked on a new structure for our higher education system. All institutions deserve to have the full opportunity to work with their local boards for the success of their institutions, their regions, and the state as a whole. The best means to accomplish these objectives is to allow 8 public universities and 17 community colleges to function unrestrained with their new boards, with a level playing field and without unreasonable constraints. I would urge your support for this bill, and I assure you that you will not be disappointed with this decision. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for the two? Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who wanted to talk to Senate Bill 493? Seeing none, we will close our public hearing on Senate Bill 493. We have another senator in the room, so we're going to open Senate Bill 860. Thank you. 860. Senator Edwards can come on up. Senator Gelser, if you want to be a part of it, since you're with us here. Okay. And our administrator will read.
Chair Roebling, members of the committee, Senate Bill 860, as introduced, directs the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to select the University of Oregon or Oregon State University to design and develop a career advising and mentorship pilot program. We are considering the Dash 1 amendments at this time.
Don't mess with the mics.
You're good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Chris Edwards. I'm the state senator from Eugene, and I'm from Eugene. I represent Eugene and Junction City. I bring you Senate Bill 860 and the Dash 1 amendments is what we're really, I hope that's what we're talking about after having some conversations with folks here in the Capitol. I'll tell you a little bit of the backstory and why I bring this bill and then walk through what the bill would do. So I think we're all concerned about the cost of tuition, the rising level of student debt, whether it's during one's undergraduate career or after one's undergraduate career. And I think that when we consider debt, we have to not only consider the amount of debt that is incurred to finish one's education at college, but we should also consider the likelihood of success, career success, financial success, and the ability to pay that debt off on the back end. And so, of course, that is a function of a lot of different things, one of which is finding a good job. Finding a good job and having financial success in a job is the function of a lot of things. Some of which could be some of what you learn in college, but a lot of which has to do with networking, has to do with people skills, has to do with making smart decisions about what you take on in your career and what you don't. But there are a lot of there's a lot of nuance, I think, that goes into career success and influences career success. And mentors can help folks make good decisions. And so the bill here spawns out of a conversation that I had with a guy that I know. And he runs a CRM software company in the Portland area. And his company provides CRM solutions, which I believe stands for customer relations management, CRM solutions for universities. And I believe it was the university, it was Syracuse University that contacted him. They were already a client. They said, hey, could you develop a solution for us to match alumni from our alumni association with undergrads, because we're starting this mentorship program. And said, sure, that sounds like a neat project, sounds like a good idea. So they tweaked their existing, I guess, software solutions in order to be able to do that, customized it however they had to. And apparently Syracuse reported great success in matching alumni with interested alumni with interested undergrads in some sort of a mentorship program. So he thought, man, why don't we do this right here in Oregon? And he himself is a graduate of one of our universities here in the state of Oregon, and they'll remain unnamed because he didn't get a very good response from them when he contacted them. And so he did not contact the administration, but rather he went to former professors that he knew. He talked with academic advising and career advising. And so first with the professors, he said, hey, what do you guys, you know, as a professor, how do you help students connect with potential job opportunities, professionals in the relevant area of study? And the couple of professors that got back to him said, well, you know, that's not really our job and our focus, so we don't really do it. And then the folks that he spoke with in academic advising, well, they didn't really handle that postgraduate world either. They're more about the requirements that are necessary to get the particular degree in the particular field of study. And then when he spoke with career advising folks, they said, well, typically we see them as, you know, they come to us as they're headed out the door. So we're not really helping them much with the planning side of things. And we don't really keep track of them after they're out in the work world. And so they kind of just pass through through career advising on their way out the door of the university with their diploma in hand. And so he posted on an online message board, hey, anybody from, you know, my alma mater, are you interested in working with me on setting up some sort of mentorship advising program for undergrads? And he had a pretty quick response of a couple hundred enthusiastic yeses, definitely, count me in. And, you know, we all know that our alumni associations in particular are not just financial gold mines, although I think that that's how they're viewed sometimes by our universities for very legitimate fundraising purposes, but they are treasure troves of experience. And some of our most active alumni association members are some of our most successful graduates from our universities, whether they live in Oregon or not, or outside of our state. So he was actually contacted by one alumni association that said, well, you know, we don't really do mentorship. That's not really our bailiwick. And so, you know, from professors to academic advising to career advising to the Alumni Association, which has the contact with potential mentors. There's a lack of coordination, it seems. And I think that we have an interest as a state to make, well, one, we have an interest in getting the cost of attending colleges and universities down and trying to minimize the debt that folks are graduating with. But as we all know, our state budgets and our budget situation, our revenue situation, and all the things that go into that have made that very challenging. So I wanted to look at the possibility of creating a couple of pilot programs, one for, and the Dash Ones contemplate, two pilot programs, one for our regional universities and one for one of the regional universities and one for one of the larger universities in the state. And presumably there would be one FTE at and the whatever the fiscal impact ends up being would be based upon one FTE at each participating university for the rest of the biennium, from however long it takes to establish that person through the end of the biennium. And that person would coordinate, would essentially just work full time to coordinate a mentorship program between and set up a pilot program between alumni that are interested and undergrads that are interested. And so hopefully we can over time really help develop help facilitate good decisions along the college career path, and then hopefully into networking and advisement once an undergrad or once a graduate has entered the workforce. So that's the idea of the bill, how I came to the idea, and where we're hoping to go with this.
Okay. Any questions for Senator Edwards? Thank you very much. We have actually run out of time, and our other committee is coming in right after this. We were on the floor a little longer, and we had it planned. Are the people in both the two bills that we have started, Senate Bill 957 and Senate Bill 860, are they able to come back on Thursday? Is there anybody that can't make it back? Come on up. You can come on up.
I can just submit testimony.
Okay.
I think that might be the most efficient way.
Okay. That would be great. I appreciate that.
Well, I'm out to Ontario to see the school. So.
Okay. that's important. Okay. With that, we are going to carry over Senate Bill 957 and SJR 18 for public hearings, and we will carry over and keep the list Senate Bill 860 and Senate Bill 957 for the finishing up of their public hearings. And they may have work sessions on the same day if we've already planned them, so we'll see how that goes as well. So we're getting close. We have three meetings left before the bills switch, and we can only work on House bills. So again, we do have a scheduled one on Friday. We got as an extra one because we lost 2 days by previous floor action.
It's your fault.
I know. It's okay. All my fault. I accept the responsibility. So, chair, heavy shoulders. So with that, having carried all those over, we will
adjourn.
Let me close the two work sessions, the two public hearings, if I haven't done that already. So we'll make sure we'll close Senate Bill 957 and Senate Bill 860, and then we will adjourn for today. Thank you for today. Thank you. Then we will adjourn for